Welcome back. I'm Peter St. Ange. This is a weekly roundup of my daily videos on the economy and freedom, where I cut through the BS and lay out what the gaslighting clowns pulled out of their hats this week and what is coming next. Disappointing job numbers are out, and Joe Biden's handlers, who may or may not be running for president, are slapping lipstick on that pig faster than a wind farm CEO can cash a taxpayer check. Last week, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that payrolls rose by just 206,000 on the month, which was slow enough to send unemployment jumping to 4.1%. That's a four-year high for unemployment. It's roughly 20% above Trump's last pre-COVID unemployment rate, and it triggers the Fed's dreaded SAM rule, suggesting that we are indeed in a recession. Congratulations to everybody. Where did it all go wrong? One word, revisions. Over 100,000 jobs we thought we had turned out to be imaginary. So May was revised down by 54,000 jobs. April was revised down by 57,000. That took the headline 206 down to just 95,000 jobs in an economy of 330 million, presumably to be revised down again next month. Of course, it gets worse. Over one-third of the jobs allegedly created were actually government workers. So depending how revisions go next month, of course, that could turn out to be half or more government workers, which is spitting distance to the Soviet Union. So if it feels like the government is taking over the economy, why, yes, it is. Worse than numbers is job composition, so part-time versus full-time. We actually lost 30,000 full-time jobs last month, swamped by 50,000 new part-time jobs. My colleague EJ Antoni calculates this brings the tally to 1.6 million lost full-time jobs over the past year, replaced by 1.8 million gigs. This matters because part-time jobs are overwhelmingly for economic reasons. People are struggling to make ends meet. So we're losing stable incomes that you can use to support a family and replacing them with gigs. Both, of course, show up as jobs in mainstream media, at least when the president is a Democrat. Finally, the elephant in the room, the millions of missing jobs. The feds peddle two big unemployment reports every month, the establishment survey and the household survey. So establishment asks companies how many jobs they created, but given almost no companies bother responding, they use statistical magic to guess, hence the massive revisions. Anyway, there's a second household survey that actually does ask people if they've got a job, and under Biden, an unprecedented gap has opened between the two, where there are 5 million supposed jobs that the household survey cannot find. This gap actually got bigger last month by yet another 90,000 missing jobs, so it's anybody's guess if jobs are growing at all. No, these people don't necessarily show up as unemployed. Millions are counted as out of the labor market. Whether they're homeless or living on government checks, statistically, they're retired. So what's next? These are not the numbers Biden wants going into an election, even if he could finish a coherent sentence. And they put Jerome Powell up against a wall, afraid to cut interest rates with inflation rising, but increasingly forced to by rising unemployment. If Jerome breaks, which historically he will, we could see the Fed cutting into rising inflation, which would just make the inflation go faster. If this happens, as seems likely, this could lock us into a 1970s stagflation that last time around delivered double-digit inflation and double-digit unemployment. France is in turmoil after all the major parties, including literal communists, ganged up to lock populists out of power in their recent legislative elections, despite French populists winning by far the highest number of votes. Left-wing voters, of course, rioted. Apparently they riot whether they win or lose. They just like riots. The end result looks like roughly a third of seats going to the communists, the New People's Front. Another one-third going to Macron's centrist Together Party, and just a quarter of seats for the populists. Contrast this with the actual votes, where the populists won over 10 million votes, versus the People's Front getting 7 million, and the centrists at just over 6.5 million. So by far the most popular party is now number three in seats and completely locked out of power, democracy in action. This is actually becoming a pattern in Europe where establishment conservatives and socialists unite to lock out populists. Germany's been doing it for years against the AfD, along with Sweden, Belgium, Netherlands, PVV, and Spain's Vox Party. I mentioned recently how Republicans and Democrats would have dearly loved to lock out their insurgents, but alas, the existential threat of a split vote forced them to play ball. Of course, these lockouts disenfranchise populist voters, who are now the largest single voting bloc in many European countries, including France, and it does nothing to temper the policies that are driving voters to populism. The inflation, joblessness, crime, the corporatist oligopolies that feed on mass migration, taxpayer handouts, the environmental mandates that deliver $1,000 electric bills and wipe out farmers and rural communities. In fact, in France at least, these are set to get much worse, since it now seems Macron has made a deal with the devil, as his left-wing allies are demanding full implementation of their hard-left utopia. That includes massive state spending, a 90% income tax, a wealth tax on all assets, presumably including retirement accounts, price freezes of consumer goods, also known as shortages of consumer goods, and of course, all the free food and housing that millions more migrants can stand. Of course, this is all quite expensive. As Daniel Lacaille wrote before the election, France was going to choose between debt, more debt, and way more debt. It looks like they chose way more debt. One study pegged the left's agenda at 6% of GDP, which would eclipse even Joe Biden's spending orgy. France's national debt is already bumping up against market limits, with French sovereign bond default instruments rising and ongoing tense negotiations with Brussels over France's out-of-control deficits. Keep in mind that 6% without accounting for what happens to jobs with a 90% income tax, why would you continue running a business in France? And then what happens to public spending for all of those unemployed workers? So what's next? Across the West, we're seeing wholesale voter rejection of Leviathan government. It's inflation, it's Sovietization of the economy, it's trampling of traditional values and communities. But we're now in the reaction stage, the Empire Strikes Back stage, after they've ignored, after they've laughed, and now they are fighting. It will be a losing fight. You don't solve voter unrest by doubling down, but things will get worse before they get better. I'm a big fan of saving Bitcoin for the long term, and the Unchained Bitcoin IRA is a great way to do that. You get the tax advantages, and if it's a Roth IRA, you're not going to pay capital gains so long as you HODL. Most Bitcoin IRAs make you give up control, which can expose you to exchange hacks or even re-lend it out like banks do. With Unchained, you control the keys to your Bitcoin, which means you always know it's there. They also provide one-on-one concierge service to walk you through it and answer any questions. Why pay more taxes than you need to? Set it up today at Unchained.com. Use promo code Peter to get $100 off a Bitcoin IRA. Yesterday was French populace getting crushed. Today it is Britain. Today is a sad day if you're British, as the communist-adjacent Labour Party pulled off a, quote, thumping election victory, shutting out the right altogether and taking an overwhelming two-thirds of seats, despite winning just 34% of the vote. In fact, it was the worst result for Conservatives, Tories, since 1832. Note, foreigners can vote in Britain. They make up a tenth of the population and they massively vote Labour, meaning that British citizens are now ruled by a government that perhaps a quarter of them actually chose. Once again, democracy in action. Labour is already promising radically higher spending, higher taxes, and of course, all the green and diversity mandates their Marx-addled minds can dream up. Interestingly enough, Labour's vote share actually fell since the last election in 2019, which they lost. So why did they get a 200-year victory? Simple, the right split the vote, as establishment Tories ignored their voters and went along with left-wing globalism light. That apparently sent half their voters to Nigel Farage's Reform Party, and given Britain's winner-take-all election system, the Tories' stupidity handed the country to Labour on a silver platter. Now, this kind of ideological insurgency is probably something we'll be seeing a lot in the next couple of years. In fact, we're seeing it in France and Germany as we speak. But it's especially important in countries with first-past-the-post elections, including not just Britain, but France, where populists just got locked out, Canada, and America. It's interesting to contrast how ideological insurgencies are playing out in America, where both major parties are currently facing insurgencies. For the Republicans, it's MAGA. For the Democrats, it is hard-left progressives. Both parties hate the insurgents. In fact, nobody actually likes each other in politics. But they also know that splitting the vote is suicidal, so they negotiate. They negotiate dirty, yes, but establishment parties face mutually assured destruction if they split the vote, so they have to make concessions. The British Tories, in contrast, have displayed breathtaking stupidity, locking out reform voters altogether, who apparently made up 40% of their potential voters, instead doubling down on the uniparty garbage that alienated those voters in the first place. So after 14 years in power, conservatives did nothing about illegal immigration. They slow-walked Brexit. They actually installed a police state for speech and conservative protest. And they doubled down on green energy, government spending, celebrating pride, and, of course, pointless wars. At the end of the day, a lot of Tory voters probably figured, why bother? So what's next? Near-term, things will get worse in Britain. More spending, despite soaring national debt, currently rising 18% annualized, along with more regulations, more political mandates, more speech police, and, of course, more mass migration. The new PM already canceled a long-planned deportation scheme on day one. But the wider question, not just in Britain but across the West, is will conservatives finally decide to fight for their voters, or will they crawl off to die, handing the keys to populace who are willing to fight? Will debt sink the American empire? So asks the Wall Street Journal in an uncharacteristically gloomy article for Wall Street's paper of record. They kick off with the obvious. America is, quote, cruising into an uncharted sea of federal debt with a government seemingly incapable of turning it around. In short, the Uniparty has set its course and there is no cavalry coming. The situation is indeed dire, with nearly $35 trillion in debt, $2 trillion annual deficits, and potentially $100 trillion plus in unfunded liabilities between Social Security and Medicare. But none of this should be shocking. Governments by nature spend everything they can get their grubby little paws on. In fact, much of history is made up, specifically of governments desperately trying or failing to sustain their outrageous mountains of debt. So debt brought down Rome, first with hyperinflation, then with a gutted military that barbarians walked right over. It brought down Spain as New World Gold funded an effective government takeover of the private sector, bankrupted France by foreign wars, Qing China collapsed by debt, and even Great Britain, who once owned nearly half of Earth and then went bankrupt. The government debt is why we got the Magna Carta, or constitutions in general, as kings pleaded for more money. It's also how we got central banks, as first Britain and then other governments licensed money printers in exchange for financing government debt. To this day, government debt crashes economies regularly. Currently, countries from Turkey to Venezuela to Nigeria are undergoing debt crises, with Argentina desperately trying to pull out of one. For better or worse, with so many historical cases, we know exactly how this ends. Investors stop buying government debt, leading to massive austerity and soaring inflation as the government retrenches. Governments cancel the trillions they promised, so much for Social Security and Medicare, and then they pull back to where they pay the Praetorian Guard and not much else, so much for Ukraine. In short, once debt hits the magic line, Washington goes from sugar daddy to the mattress scene in Godfather, a few trusted lieutenants for the final standoff. Note that historically it all happens much faster than people imagine, so everything is fine until it crashes in that famous perfect storm. So what's next? Washington's debt can be stopped. In fact, we did stop it in the 90s under Clinton and Gingrich. From 1997 to 2000, Washington actually ran budget surpluses. The key for that moment was gridlock, two parties that despised each other so much, the only thing they could agree on was blocking each other. Unfortunately, whether it was corporate donors or golden parachutes for politicians, both parties have since made up and now cooperate to loot the people. Democrats generally use their chits to feed their activist army at taxpayer expense, while Republicans instead give them to Ukraine. Still, there is a ray of hope. Clinton Gingrich was not that long ago. The parties can hate each other again if they try, instead of conspiring against the defenseless people. Alas, voters have to demand it because Washington will not fix itself. Last week, I had a great interview with Daniela Cambone on the coming crisis in the future of the dollar. Check it out at ITM Trading on YouTube. If you're not familiar with ITM, I've gotten to know the team, and they're a family-owned gold and silver dealer who's been in business for over 28 years. They sell gold and silver, but a big part of their approach is educating people to understand the power of gold and silver through their YouTube channel and free consultations. If you're thinking about adding gold or silver to your portfolio, or if you want to protect your retirement from stock market volatility, geopolitics, and inflation, give ITM a call. They won't pressure you. Their reviews reflect the time and care they put into each relationship, and a conversation with ITM could provide you with valuable insights. Call 866-414-1366. A new study finds that just 6% of government workers actually come to the office. The other 94% are pretending COVID's still going or perhaps never really worked in the first place. Meanwhile, a separate study finds government workers make nearly 40% more than the private sector workers who are footing their extravagant salaries for apparently staying at home. Given the famous productivity of government workers, even when they do show up, this might strike many taxpayers as excessive. In fact, it might just be time for the Elon solution. Fire 80% or perhaps 94% and let the healing begin. Apparently, the White House has been politely asking government workers to maybe think about swinging by the office every so often, but they are ignored since government workers pretty much keep their jobs no matter what, and most probably plan to keep kicking back until they retire at 50, well, perhaps 55, which is apparently the standard retirement age for government workers. Their union sums it up, quote, "They worked heroically through the pandemic. The idea they have to go to the office is now absurd." Heroically, I tell you. It's good to be king, lording it over these suckers who pay the bills, and lord it they do. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, government wages and benefit average nearly 40% more than the commoner plebs who foot the bill and actually had to work for the money. This is made of $44 per hour in wage and a hilarious $24 per hour in benefits. Benefits are nearly twice the private sector level. Why so many bennies? Because they're hard for taxpayer advocates to see. They especially do this with public school teachers, where wages are held down, especially for new teachers, so they can wave a pathetic number in front of taxpayers while the benefits and 3 months plus vacation take average teacher pay to nearly $80 per hour, which is twice the median American. Of course, it's much higher in big cities where unions essentially own City Hall and teachers leave kids illiterate and unable to figure out how many dimes are in a dollar. So how did we get here? There were two key moments in the government worker aristocracy that apparently rules over America. The first was the Pendleton Act of 1883, which replaced the previous system where presidents hired or fired all government workers with an allegedly corrupt-proof system where government workers became essentially independent of presidents, meaning independent of voters. The second was the creation of government worker unions during the Depression, something even FDR opposed. He called them, quote, "unthinkable and intolerable," since they essentially hold the people hostage to the government itself. Alas, FDR failed to stop it since the optics did not really work for him. And so here we are, ruled by an army of 19 million government workers, roughly 12% of the entire workforce, and of course, a rabid voter constituency for yet more government spending, be better to pay their benefits. So what's next? There's actually a surprisingly clean solution to our imperial aristocracy, one that Trump had planned to implement in his second term, called Schedule F reform. This would strip many federal workers of their job immunity, allowing a president, being the representative of the people, to fire them at will. This is essential to getting government workers back to actually serving the people. It's the only way to prevent future presidents from being rolled or blocked by the deep state again. Carried across the federal bureaucracy, then onto state and local governments, and perhaps Americans could even start thinking of government workers as helpful rather than something resembling an occupying army. Thanks for listening. Remember to subscribe to get next week's episode fresh in your inbox and go to petersaintonge.com to read the weekly articles with charts and all the gory details. Okay, we'll be watching. See you next time.